Happy Good Friday, all of you. And the only reason that this Friday is good is because Jesus became the atoning sacrifice for our sins, and he resurrected bodily on the third day thereafter. And so I hope you will remember all those things in your observations today. Don't forget that you should be with your home congregation this weekend, especially this weekend when we're celebrating the resurrection of Jesus Christ. If you don't have a home congregation, please do your research, find a place, and get plugged in there starting now on this very special weekend. And then one more thing before I move on. If you're looking for a home church and you're within driving distance of Elkhart East, please come check us out. I'd love to see you in the assembly as we celebrate the Lord's resurrection this year. Let's go ahead and open our Bibles to Numbers 31. We had just read the first few verses of this last time we were together. I want to read them again. I'm not going to go into as much detail. It says, "He who has spoke to Moses, saying, 'Avenge the people of Israel on the Midianites. Afterward, you shall be gathered to your people.' So Moses spoke to the people, saying, 'Arm men from among you for the war, and they may go against Midian to execute he who is his vengeance on Midian.'" So the Midianites were the ones that set up this sinful opportunity of worshiping Baal of Peor for the Israelis to get drunk and party and eat sacrifices offered to a pagan deity, have sex with the Midianite people. And this brought God's vengeance or judgment on many tens of thousands of Israelis there on the plains of Moab. And so we knew at the time that God was not going to let this stand. This was a great temptation that cost a lot of people their lives. And so now comes the reprisal war, directed by God, but one of the last things carried out by prophet Moses before he dies here at the tail end of the 40th year of the Exodus. Verse 4, "You shall send 1,000 from each of the tribes of Israel to the war." So there were provided out of the thousands of Israel, 1,000 from each tribe, 12,000 armed for war. Now, that's not an awful lot of people when you compare that to 600,000 plus male names that are on the census list. This is a very small unit that's going out. It is still pretty big sounding. It's like two Roman legions in their full footmen force, but it's not very many compared to the fullness of the Israeli adult male population. So what happened? Moses sent them out for war, 1,000 from each tribe, together with Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, the priest. So he's going to function as the war chaplain, if you will, with the vessels of the sanctuary. Now, what does that mean? Well, does that mean that the Ark of the Covenant with them? Possibly. Or did he just simply take some sort of containers with incense so that he could be praying for those that were involved in this action? I'm not sure. It's interesting that it doesn't specify which vessels or implements from the tabernacle are going with them. But he also takes the trumpets for the alarm in his hand. So the communication trumpets, the two silver trumpets that will be used in the war action. So verse 7, "They warred against Midian as he who is commanded Moses and killed every male." So this is a very strong divine reprisal against the Midianites, which is rather tragic when you think about it. Only 40 years earlier, Moses was living in Midian with his father-in-law, Jethro, or his title seems to be Reuel, the shepherd of God, who was priest, I think, of God Most High in Midian. So at that time, 40 years ago, it seems that the Midianites were fairly religious and seemed to have a good remnant of the Abrahamic faith in place because they are related to the Abrahamic line. But that seems to have gone by the wayside. They seem to be involved in pagan worship, and they are also quite open to getting other people groups to sin against their God and his commands by offering opportunity to join them in their worship paganism. And so God is going to judge them for this by using the Israelites. And really what we're going to find out as we continue in the story of Israel is that Israel was God's instrument of judgment against the Canaanite peoples that had become so horribly sinful since the time of Abraham. But first, Midianites need to be judged. So verse 8, they killed the kings of Midian with the rest of their slain. Evi, Rechem, Zur, which that name should prompt a memory in your head. That's the prince of Midian who is the father of the woman that was being brought back into the Israeli encampment by Zimri, the bad Israeli, that Phinehas executed them because they were carrying on in a pagan, sinful way right next to the tabernacle. So here, the dad of that woman is now killed. Hur as well, and Reba, the five kings of Midian. Again, I don't know how it happened. We can make some assumptions between the lines of the story. But the Midianites came into this story because they were allies with the Moabites. But once the Balaam thing fell apart, the Moabites seem to have backed out of the story altogether. And so it's only the Midianites that participated in the sinful temptation of the Israelites. And so they're the ones that are getting it the worst. But not only did the five kings of Midian get executed, look at the next part of verse 8. And they also killed Balaam, the son of Beor, with the sword. So the very guy that used to be the prophet of God Most High, living up probably in the area where Abraham and came from originally, he was the one that offered the advice on how to get God to curse the Israelites. And so he ends up dead in the reprisal war. And so this is one of those really sad stories in Scripture, that we have a guy that started out probably in right relationship with God. I mean, he was a very famous prophet. But his story seems to end with him being a rebel against God. And that does not speak well for his eternal state. I'm not going to come right out and say that he will be lost, but wow, it sure seems that that's the direction his choice took him. Verse number 9. So the people of Israel took captive the women of Midian and their little ones. That's very standard procedure in a war, is that the male combatants end up killed, and the female and minor non-combatants get captured. And they also took as plunder all their cattle, their flocks, and all their goods. Again, very standard procedure in ancient warfare. Now, all their cities in the places where they lived, and all their encampments they burned with fire. Now, Midian, remember, is south and east from Moab. Now, when they came up to be allies to Moab, they were probably on the border of the plains of Moab, and those would be the encampments, the temporary places. Those were the first places that got hit by the reprisal war. But then it seems as if God directed them to push all the way down into Midian itself and take out the kings and take out the cities. All the encampments, all the cities got burned to the ground. Again, pretty standard procedure in a war. They took all the spoil and all the plunder, both of man and beast. Then, verse 12, they brought the captives and the plunder and the spoil to Moses and to Eleazar the priest and to the congregation of the people of Israel at the camp on the plains of Moab by the Jordan at Jericho. So because God is involved in this reprisal war, it doesn't take very long. God supernaturally charges the army to let them do this job with great excellence. Then they bring all of their POWs and the plunder back with them to the plains of Moab. Now Moses, verse 13, and Eleazar the priest and all the chiefs of the congregation went to meet them outside the camp. Moses, who, remember, is the commander-in-chief in all matters, Joshua seems to be his aide-de-camp and his commander on the ground. Moses was angry with the officers of the army, the commanders of thousands, the commanders of hundreds who had come from service in the war. Moses said to them, "Have you let all the women live? Or why have you let all the women live? Behold, these, on Balaam's advice, caused the people of Israel to live treacherously, to act treacherously against he who is in the incitement of Peor. And so the plague came among the congregation of he who is." So Moses is like, "You're kidding me, right? You're bringing back the women that were involved in the corruption of the people of Israel that got those tens of thousands of people killed. You're bringing them back here to this encampment?" Verse 17, "Now therefore kill every male among the little ones." Now, the little ones here, the word has to do with those that are not yet majority age, but it doesn't necessarily mean little bitty babies. And so it could be that we're talking about young men that were just shy of being military age. So those are to be executed. Kill every woman who has known a man by lying with him. So all of the women who had been involved in the sexual compromise of Israel. But all the young girls who have not known a man by lying with him, keep alive for yourselves. So yes, they can be your standard prisoners of war. Now, we do not understand. We can comprehend this. This is a mindset of the ancient world. We don't have it. We don't have any clue as to how this felt. Prisoners of war very often became slaves. And sometimes those slaves became, over time, incorporated into the society that had won the war. And we'll even read later about some women that end up becoming wives of Israelis, and they become adopted into the Israeli nation. So this is, like I said, this is a little bit beyond our understanding as to keeping the little girls around, and eventually some of those little girls will grow up and get married to Israeli men, and they'll just become Israelis themselves. Verse number 19. "In camp outside the camp 7 days." That's a standard cooling off period or cleansing period. "Whoever of you has killed any person, whoever has touched any slain, purify yourselves and your captives. On the third day, and on the seventh day. Again, if you go back and read the things we read in the book of Leviticus, that was common practice when coming into contact with a dead body or with blood, that you purify yourself with like a bath on the third day and the seventh day. You shall purify every garment, every article of skin, all work of goat's hair, and every article of wood. So that's talking about all the plunder. Every bit of the plunder has to go through a cleansing procedure. Then Eleazar the priest said to the men in the army who had gone to battle, "This is the statute of the law that he who is has commanded Moses. Only the gold, the silver, the bronze, the iron, the tin, and the lead, everything that can stand the fire, you shall pass through the fire, and it shall be clean. Nevertheless, it shall also be purified with the water for impurity." That's the holy water made from the red heifer ashes. Whatever can stand the fire, you shall pass through the water. You must wash your clothes on the seventh day, and then you shall be clean, and afterward you may come into the camp. So this is the procedure. You have to stay outside the boundaries of the camp because you are unclean because you've been involved in war. You've come into contact with unclean things. So you and every bit of plunder has to go through decontamination procedures or cleansing ceremonies before you can be welcomed back into the camp. Verse 25. "He who has said to Moses, take the count of the plunder that was taken, both of man and of beast, you and Eleazar and the priest and the heads of the fathers' houses of the congregation, divide the plunder into two parts between the warriors who went to battle and then all the congregation." So half of the plunder goes to those 12,000 guys that were actively involved in the war. That will be their war pay. The other half will go to the congregation as a whole because they are the supporters of the war. And then it says that levy for he who is a tribute from the men of war who went to battle, 1 out of 500 of the people of the oxen, the donkeys, and the flocks. So 1/500th of what they took is going to belong immediately to Eleazar and the priesthood. Take it from their half, give it to Eleazar the priest as a contribution to he who is. Because remember, the priesthood, the Levites, are actually a separate entity. They're not part of the 12 tribes of Israel per se. So they get 1/500th of the half that the warriors got. Verse 30, "From the people of Israel's half, you shall take 1 drawn out of 50. So 1/50th of the half that went to those that didn't go to the war. And that's going to be of the people. The people here would be the POWs. The oxen, the donkeys, the flocks, all the cattle. Give them to the Levites. So the priests get the stuff that comes from the warriors. The Levites get the stuff that comes from the people's half, who keep guard over the tabernacle of he who is. And so Moses and Eleazar the priest did as he who is commanded Moses. And then for those that are curious about such things, it says the plunder remaining of the spoil that the army took was 675,000 sheep. So that tells you that they brought back a lot of stuff. 72,000 cattle, 61,000 donkeys, and 32,000 persons in all, women who had not known man by lying with him. The portion of those who had gone out into the army numbered 337,500 sheep. You can read that for yourself. It's half. And so you can figure that out on your own. It keeps doing the people's half down in the next few verses until you finally get down to verse 48 is where I want to pick up. "The officers who were over the thousands of the army, the commanders of thousands, commanders of hundreds, came near to Moses and said to Moses, your servants, listen to this, your servants have counted the men of war who are under our command. There is not a man missing from us. So 12,000 Israelis went to war, and 12,000 Israelis came back. That is miraculous. That never happens unless God has provided for it. And so this was, by all direction, the first major military operation by this group that's going to go into the Promised Land. And God kept his promise and kept them safe in the midst of it. Now, we will come to a story where they are shocked when they lose just 30-some people in a military operation, because that hadn't happened to them before. It turns out that there was sin in the camp, and God did not protect them that time around. So this military operation is a very interesting precursor to the operations that will take place inside the Promised Land once they cross the Jordan. Back to the text, verse 50, where the leadership, the officers, are talking to Moses. Verse 50, we have brought, he who is his offering, what each man found, articles of gold, armlets and bracelets, signet rings, earrings and beads, to make atonement for ourselves before he who is. So one of the ways that they look at it is that they want to make things right with God after having been out doing war. And so they give this offering to God as his portion of this reprisal war. Moses and Eleazar the priest received from them the gold, all the crafted articles, and all the gold of the contribution that they presented to he who is, from the commanders of thousands, the commanders of hundreds, was 16,750 shekels. Now remember, this is a weight, so that's many tons of material. The men in the army had taken plunder for himself. Moses and Eleazar the priest received the gold from the commanders of thousands and hundreds and brought it into the tent of meeting as a memorial for the people of Israel before he who is. I've said several times now that a lot of this is very standard procedure for the ancient world, and definitely the ancient Middle East. The depositing of large amounts of gold and silver and bronze and iron and copper and all of that taken during a war into the shrine of the god of the people that won the war. That was common procedure. And so the Israelis adopt the exact same practice at God's direction. And this is one of the reasons why the tabernacle, and then later the temple, becomes the repository of so much precious metal. And when they get invaded from time to time because of their sin, that precious metal gets plundered. And so that will be something we will take note of in later stories. The wealth that's starting to be accumulated at the tabernacle right now will be tapped into later. Chapter 32, we'll get started on a new story. We won't finish it, obviously. We've only got about 3 minutes. But this is related to the fact that the Israelis have been gifted by God all of the territory on the east side of the Jordan that they took in response to being attacked by the Amorites. God defended them. They defeated Sihon in the south part of the Jordan Valley, and then they defeated Og, Og in the northern part of the Jordan Valley, up on the east side of the Sea of Galilee, a place that is eventually going to be settled down and kind of called Golan or Gaul. And so that long stretch from the plains of Moab all the way up to the foothills of Mount Hermon, all of that has now been annexed into the Promised Land. It wasn't originally part of the Promised Land, but it has now been annexed into it. So chapter 32 says, the people of Reuben and the people of Gad had a very great number of livestock. A lot of that just came into their possession, didn't it? And they saw the land of Jazer and the land of Gilead. So that's kind of the midpoint as you're going north from the plains of Moab. That's the midpoint of the newly annexed territories. And behold, the place was a place for livestock. Perfect place for raising, you know, cattle and sheep and goats. So the people of Gad and the people of Reuben said to Moses and to Eleazar the priest and to the chiefs of the congregation, and then we've got the names of some of these places, the land that he who is struck down before the congregation of Israel is a land for livestock, and your servants have livestock. And they said, if we found favor in your sight, let this land be given to your servants for a possession. Don't take us across the Jordan. Now, at first blush, that seems like no big deal for us because it's like, well, yeah, it all belongs to Israel. Why wouldn't they occupy it and use it? And why wouldn't these guys look at that and go, hey, that's some good stuff? But the story that we'll come to next time is that it ticks Moses off. Come back next time to find out why.